Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
wonders of the night sky you must see before you die. I'm giving this podcast from inside my car, partly because it's so unbelievably cold and windy outside where I normally give the podcast, so the sound probably will be really low. I just thought, look, may as well do it. In fact, I've taken my own will into my own hands. I've just put the car seat back a little bit to read it. So I'm holding the shotgun microphone, and we're up to number 40. Magical Mirror. M-I-R-A. Mirror. Oh, there's the person who does my blood at blood tests is called Mirror. So and this, the Hubble Space Telescope image of Mirror reveals an odd football-shape, which may be linked to the dramatic changes in the star during the expansion and contraction cycles. My good father, this would be a red giant, and they are space cauliflowers. Oh, Mirror. Oh dear. Oh, I just wonder where it is. Oh, it's there. I think it might be in the northern hemisphere. But I love the Pleiades and Aldebaran and Taurus and stuff like that. Now you see it, and now you don't. Every 332 days, the red giant Mirror in the constellation Cultus the Whale pulls itself out of the hat and shines in plain view like any other star in the sky. Then, without warning, it fades and disappears. Or so it seems. In binoculars and small telescopes, Mirror remains faintly visible around and well below the naked eye limit. About 3 months later, it rebounds again and returns to a form of brilliance. What's going on here? Mirror is an enormous red giant star, desperately close to the end of its life. It wasn't always this way. The star began life much like the Sun, happily burning hydrogen in its core and settling in for a long, stable adult of a steady light. Stability is a good thing because, at least in our solar system, it provided time needed for life to evolve and become both ubiquitous and tenacious on our little blue planet. Oh, beautiful writing you've got, Astro Bob. Did any possible planets around Mirror take advantage of the same? Oh, big question. Because Mirror was born several billion years before the Sun, it's further along the evolutionary track and provides a glimpse into the Sun's distant future. All the hydrogen in its core has been cooked into heavier element helium. Gravity compresses the helium further, increasing the core's temperature till it can burn helium into carbon and oxygen. Simple elements like hydrogen, helium, and a bit of lithium are locked up in the early universe, long after the Big Bang. More complex ones, especially carbon, so important to life, were synthesized in the core of stars. Helium burns hotter than hydrogen. It requires a higher temperature to burn. As Mirror began to burn helium, the heat produced triggered hydrogen burning in the shell around its core, causing the star to bloom into a red giant. So you can have shell burning there, but it has to compress anyway. You know, it's got to compress. There's nothing magical about it. The temperature doesn't really get it up there. Okay. And you've got sort of other pathways, CNO cycle, which is, so you've got a whole lot of factors in the burning, shell burning. To a giant. But it's evolved to a giant gas bag over 350 times its size. Wispy Atlas of such an enormous star don't feel much gravitational tug from the distant center, so they're constantly losing material to space, like a perpetual private dust storm surrounding Peanut's character, Pigpen, which is an important point to it. But the sort of the other aspect of it is that the actual the star hasn't got this burning process, which is keeping gas inside it. The huge outflow of material distorts the star's shape, making it an out of round. It's more cauliflower shape, I think. It's more all these features in it. Mirror began to expand and contract like a balloon inflated and deflated at regular intervals. Interval changes in mirror as it's adjusted to the burning inside the outside of the core made it unstable. Over a period of 332 days, the star's outer envelope expands and cools. Gravity then draws the material back in and reheats it, initiating another cycle of expansion. It's very, very interesting, that thing. Mirror is brightest when it's contracting, faintest when it's expanding. Pulses remind us human of the human heart, but instead 72 beats a minute. Mirror beats once every 11 months. Beautiful, beautifully put together. Isn't that the most beautiful things? Several thousand mirror-type stars are known. Their pulsations between 100 and 1,000 days, but Mirror is the first one discovered. Oh, gee. German pastor, astronomer, dabbler, David Fabricius noticed Mirror's variation in August 1596 while using a comparison star to determine the position of Jupiter as the nearby Aries ram. From August the 3rd to 21st, the star brightness increased. Then in September, it began to fade and was invisible by October. Suddenly, the brightening, followed by the eventual disappearance, is a typical of a nova or a new star, exactly what Fabricius assumed he was looking at. But he was taken by surprise when it reappeared again in the February 1609. He must have realized something exceptional happened, but whether for whatever reason, Mirror was forgotten and ignored until astronomer Johannes Fullerides Hollowatha rediscovered it 29 years later, in 1638. Hollowatha determined that the star took 11 months to rise from minimum to brightness maximum and back to the minimum. And so that's, what are those, Cepheids? I don't know if that is actually a Cepheid, I don't know. By this time, other astronomers were paying attention to the star, including Johannes Helvicus, who in 1642 named it Mirror, Latin for wonderful. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Both the star came from the word, both the stars and the name comes the word miracle, share the same root. Pity the pastor Fabricius never lived long enough for the astronomical community to appreciate his discovery. He died in 1617 at the age of 53 after alleging from the pulpit that the local peasant stole one of his geese. Not long after, the man struck him in the head with the shovel and killed him. There you go. I love that tuffet. Ugh, isn't that great? The fates will be kinder to you when you step outside to see Mirror up to, and I've included a short list below of the approximate times when the star reaches peak brightness through to 2024. For several months around that time, the star is easily visible without optical aid. For the rest of the cycle, a pair of binoculars and small scope will keep it in view. It takes a star about 100 days to climb from minimum to maximum, and about 230 days to fall back to minimum. This means some exciting observing in the weeks before the peak, when Mirror's brightness changes rapidly. The maximum, a maximum mirror can be shine brightly as the brightest star in the Big Dipper stars, but it's usually close in magnitude to 3 to 3.5, with an orange-red colour. That's obvious in binoculars and telescopes. Fall and winter evenings are best times to see the star, but if Mirror is at the top of its cycle, midsummer, it's worth rising early before dawn. Okay, let's see what we're up to in terms of time here, because I'm going to be missed. Is that 9 minutes? Okay. The light's not all that good here in the car. I'm going to turn that's even worse. Okay, a bright comet. I'll tell you what, 1986, the roof of Melbourne University opens up, and you can actually see. You use a little telescope to see, what is it, what's the Halley's Comet, Hayley's comment, and the sort of feeling that I won't be alive to see it again, or I suppose I could be. You know, wouldn't that be incredible if I was alive long enough? I wonder when Hayley's comment's coming back. They might mention it. But there, it was just a tiny little bit of blue boof. And of course, I'd take people up to see it, and they'd go, oh, they just basically heap shit on you. If anything represents the value of science in shifting humanity's viewpoint from fear and ignorance to knowledge and wonder, it's our understanding of the nature of comets. For centuries, they were considered to be omens of bad time, whether in the present or soon to come. The last thing you'd want to see after a hard day in the field was a big, bright comet hanging over your house. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Oh, he's such a great person. I think I can emulate him, I hope. But then came Galileo, Kepler, and Newton, and in 1687, the date of Newton's theory of gravity was published in his book, Principia, Comets Were Tamed. Edmund Halley, friend of Newton, paid for a publication out of his own pocket because he realised the importance of Newton's idea. Whoa, isn't that amazing? Then, using Newton's law, Halley calculated the orbits of what were thought to be three separate isolated comets, only to discover they were the repeat visits of just one single one. In honour of his discovery, it was named Halley's Comet. Before Halley's time, no one knew comets orbited the Sun like planets. They just appeared out of nowhere, like they still do, and scare the heck out of people. You and I are the benefactors of the hard work of Newton and his friends because we know that comets aren't evil omens, but small asteroid-like bodies made of ice and dust that orbit the Sun in a manner similar to the planets. Is he not the best writer? Isn't that beautiful? Isn't it beautiful the way he's written? I wish I could do this. This leaves us free to enjoy comets for what is a thing of nature commonly transformed by the heat of the Sun into one of the most alluring spectacles we might hope to see in our lifetime. Oh, what a fantastic writing. When far from the Sun, most comets are inert orbs of dusty, dirty ice anywhere from a few hundred feet to 6 miles, 6 kilometres across. Close-up photographs of space flybys have revealed that some of the comets are shaped like bowling pins with bulbous heads and bottoms separated by a narrow waist. They orbit the Sun with periods ranging from a few years up to millions of years. Some of you may remember Comet Halley-Bopp in 1997, the last exceptionally bright comet to glaze the northern hemisphere skies. It missed the south completely. It's not expected to return for another 2,500 years. The reason some of the comets are so long to go around the Sun is because they move in elongated cigar-shaped orbits that take them beyond Neptune and even out to the Oort Cloud. A huge repository of comets have been cooling its heels since the formation of the solar system. The Oort Cloud occupies a roughly spherical volume of space. So you've got the Kuiper belt and the Oort Cloud. Isn't that amazing? 465 billion to 9.3 trillion miles. Okay, 784 billion to 15 trillion kilometers. So, what is it? 9.3 trillion kilometers is a light year, so it's, you know, pretty way. It would, if we could shrink the solar system down so the cloud were half a football field, where the Sun and eight planets would fit in a sphere only 0.3 metres across at the centre. At the far end of the orbit, steeped in bone-cold chill of space, a comet practically is indistinguishable from an asteroid. But let time pass, as it draws closer to the Sun, heat vaporizes the water and the dust-laden ice of the comet. Set free by vaporization, the dust gathers in a cloud around the nucleus to form a tenuous atmosphere called a coma, from the Latin hair. The coma gives the comet its familiar, fuzzy appearance, but a real magic happens when the physical pressure of the sunlight pushes the ball of dust back of the comet to form a tail. Well, it means it doesn't really push it back, it just changes its orbital speed a little bit, so it lags behind. It doesn't sound like much work with the mass-wise, it isn't. But when the comet passes near the Earth and we get a sidelong view of the tail, even folks who don't look at the sky much will go outside for a look. Tails give the comet their special beauty. Sunlight illuminates the dust of the comet's tail the same way it lights up dust in a bedroom when you fluff the sheets. Often a second tail, called an iron tail, forms with ultraviolet light on sunlight, rips away electrons from the atoms of the gases, turning them into ions. Ions get swept up by the magnetic forces embedded in the solar wind, a stream ionized particles streaming daily from the sun and carried away from the coma in the form of a narrow tail directly opposite the sun. And there you go. The most commonly ionized gas is carbon monoxide, which scatters blue light. So the tails typically look pale blue compared to the yellow-hued dust tail. Changing viewing angles as both the Earth and comet orbit the sun can shift the tail this way and that. Fluctuations in the solar wind can snap off the iron tail and regrow dilators. Watching these changes make compelling viewing for the reason some amateur and professional astronomers specialize in comet watching and study nothing else. Astronomers have plotted the orbits of nearly 200 periodic comets, and the ones that circle the sun in fewer than 200 years have been observed during more and more perihelion passages. A comet or planet is at perihelion when closest to the sun. Halley's Comet, with a period of 76 years, has a good example of a periodic comet. So I wonder whether I'll be 20... I'll be 96. I'll be nearly, if I'm 100, I'll live to it again. There's hundreds of non-periodic comets as well, many of which have only been observed once because they take thousands of years to orbit the sun. I think every... if you've got to be... Oh, and then you've got air glow. I love air glow. But this is...
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.